Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jack, I swear you came on in January and you tried to sell Liverpool Tarkowski and now you're trying to fucking sell him the West Ham. Wait, wait.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Clash of the Correspondents. My name's James, and today we're joined by two of our correspondents ahead of a big game on Monday evening in the Premier League. Firstly, let me introduce you to at Turfy Topper, Jack Toner, our Burnley correspondent. How are you, Jack?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Good man. And also, let me introduce you to at FPO underscore Sky Addict, Chris Stone, our West Ham United correspondent. How are you, Chris?
Yep, I'm good. Flying high, just about.
Good man. We'll come back to that. Jack, before we started us, is there anything you particularly want covered? You said, I got a feeling you might cover Chris Wood. Where are you at with him personally is the first thing I'm interested to know. Is he in that team at the moment?
He's not been in my team, purely because just with the way transfers have worked around, he's just not been one that's been a necessity. But that being said, you know, he's we talked about last time when we played Southampton about Vidra and how he's come into the team. You know, they have striked up a real partnership. Even if you take away his hat-trick from the last game, he would have still been, he would have had 6 goals and 3 assists in his last 7 games. So he would have still had 3 goals, you know, aside to that. So, you know, he has had a good return. But yeah, he's just back to playing his best. It's his fourth season for us now, and every season he's always got past that 10-goal mark. And when we were playing Southampton a few weeks back, you know, it looked like it was going to be the one that got away this season. But you know, he's putting his foot down, and him and Vidra have formed that real partnership. Likewise as well, his all-round game has been a lot better. So I don't know if you watched the game at the weekend, but for the last one when he set up Westwood, you know, he just didn't see the shot coming and just perfectly laid it off. Assist for Vidra, but he's had 3 assists as well in his last 7. In an entire Burnley shirt, he's only ever had 7 assists, and 3 of them have been this season. So yeah, his all around game's been much better, back to his usual standard.
Yeah, it's interesting just because we covered him quite a bit because we last spoke before you played at Southampton, as you said, and I want to come back to the game because obviously you lost to Southampton and Newcastle 2 games where you're winning. And it's very un-Burnley-like. But in that Southampton game, I'd said afterwards, because we've been speaking about Vidra a lot beforehand because of enableability, if you will, because of his price, and Wood really stood out against Southampton in terms of afterwards reflect going, you know what, he could have had a hold there. Then he's obviously laid on the goal for Vidra against Newcastle, had other chances. Then you changed the system at Manchester United, and I thought he played really well, actually, considering he did a lone man job. And when he got sight of goal, he wasn't hesitating. He kept shooting and stuff. He had a load of efforts in the United game that blocked on that. But you know what? His confidence is up. And then obviously Sunday, that's all come to the fore. And I mean, the way he took the first goal was elite, mate.
Yeah. Yeah. His feet was ridiculous, which he doesn't always have. He's better than what he gets credit for his feet, but we didn't expect that.
Is there a fitness thing with him? Is there anything in that? Because he just looks, I mean, that with the feet work against Connor Cody, just looks like a player at the top of his game. And as you said, I don't feel like we've seen that much this season.
I think that's probably a case with a lot of Burnley players, which probably I don't even notice, because Dyche is very rigid in the fact of, you know, that's another positive with Wood and Vidra at the minute, because they've got that partnership between them. and we just won at the weekend. You know, both of them are going to start at the weekend. Dyche doesn't rest his players. He doesn't play into that. You know, compare Pep Guardiola to Sean Dyche and the way they do the recovery times. If we've won at the weekend, then the same team starts. So yeah, he's had that injury. You know, he's come back. He's recovered. He's made his way back into the team, and perhaps he is just looking a bit fresher and sharper. Start the season. One of the earlier podcasts we did, it was not long after we played West Brom, and he missed an absolute sitter. And you think usually he misses a sitter and the next one's in, and he just did look to shadow his former self. But I think he's pretty much back up to his best. And let's be honest, for a team like us, he is going to have spells like that. But yeah, he is looking bang in form at the minute.
Over the last those four games, no one's had more shots in the box. No one's had more shots on target than Chris Wood.
Yeah.
However, Chris, if I look over the last six game weeks, there's only two players who've got more points than Chris Wood. And one of them, of course, is our old dear friend Jaylings, Mr. Jesse Lingard. There were some rumours that went round on Thursday that suggested that he might have been injured, but I know ex-West Ham United employee who's very much in the know has said that he's training. There's no issue at the moment. Obviously, the game's not till Monday. But where do you stand with Lingard at the moment? Because all I see on my timeline is quite a lot of one blank and frustrations already crept in, like, a West Ham on the downturn now. How do you feel about Lingard specifically at the moment?
I don't know. He's carrying maybe a slight knock or something, because he didn't, I think it was not the last game, the game before, he went down near the end and they thought it was a hamstring, but it was turned out to be cramp. So maybe it's a little bit of tiredness or fatigue. I know that sounds a bit dark because he's only played half a season, but then you're condensing it. He's not played much football, has he? And maybe playing that amount of games, maybe. But as I say, like you said, ex-West Ham employee said he's been training, so I don't suppose any reason why he won't start. I think he's been playing all right. I think where we've missed Rice, I think that's probably hurt him. It's always hurt the whole team, but it almost feels like maybe the first couple of games where we had no Antonio and Bowen and Lingard were there. Teams were obviously focusing a lot on Bowen and Lingard, obviously more so Lingard because of they know what damage they can do. So maybe there's an element of that. You know, at first it was a little bit of a surprise, caught a few teams cold. We started games very well. I don't think anything's really changed. He's still got that work rate that he's doing. Probably not getting as many chances as what he was. You know, he's getting into the box a lot more, and I think that's probably brought about by the facts of Rice not playing. It's having an impact on our shape and the way we're playing. It's affecting Suchek. Suchek's not getting into the box. He's having to do a lot more defensive work and covering. Noble's doing a good job for what he can do, but he's not the most mobile if you compare him to Rice. So it's having an impact, and obviously we've not got a massive squad. We've had a few injuries and that kind of thing, like a lot of teams, but it seems to have come maybe at the wrong time. But I don't think there's any reason why we can't turn it around. I mean, against Chelsea just basically Tuchel done his homework. He changed his formation slightly, changed his tactics, put big centre backs there, so nullified the set pieces. We played okay, but didn't really look like we were necessarily going to score or win in that game.
You're missing too many players at the end.
Yeah,
I mean Cresswell, Masuaku, Rice, Antonio. It's just become one too many. But obviously Dawson missed the Chelsea game as well.
Yeah, it's that
became
as well.
One too many. I mean, it's half your team, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean it's going to catch up.
That's going to affect most people,
especially against Chelsea. And Chelsea played a strong team. You know, they didn't rest anyone for the Champions League or anything like that. So they took that game. They were always obviously going to take it seriously, but they played that to get a result, and they did what they've been doing lately. You know, it was a close game, and they had the edge, I think, attacking wise.
To close on Lingard, he's played 13 games for West Ham. He's got 13 returns. He's only blanked twice. He's 6.7 million. I can't actually see why I'd be considering getting rid of him when, to be honest, that's what probably still gives you the hope, Chris, for the top four is on my fixture ticker. Final five fixtures, I make you guys best.
I mean, he's got, I don't know why you would drop him, to be fair, because he's, you know, if ever there's a talisman, that, you know, in fantasy terms, he is it, isn't he? He's the focal point of the team. He's enjoying his football. He's obviously popular with the players. He's playing with confidence. I don't think there's any reason really to take him out. And he's got that explosive nature. You know, he could pop up with, which is not something you associate with Jesse Lingard, but he could quite easily pop up with two goals.
No, I think he falls into that category that a lot of people do, where you get kind of, I've used him and Bamford as the two examples this season, where you have kind of a preconceived idea of what a player is. Mm. And the two cases when you look at it in hindsight is, well, we don't see Bamford play for Leeds in the Premier League. And we haven't seen Jesse Lingard play for West Ham in the Premier League. So why we should necessarily have these preconceptions about players when they're walking into new scenarios, I think that's the difference of what we've learned this year. And actually, to come back to Wood, Chris, one of the things I meant to mention to you, Jack, sorry, is he always seems to finish the season well. And that's why I started with him in game week one, even though you had a blank, because he'd finished last season so well and he'd finished the season before well. And I think I'd predicted him to sort of pass 15 plus goals this season was one of the things I'd predicted. I was looking at him as a potential, you know, just sit there as third striker because of his consistency. I had to get rid because you were so poor at the start, yeah. Mate. You weren't scoring any goals or anything. And we spoke about his form at the time. Why do you think he does keep finishing seasons well?
I don't know. I think his season will come where he just has a real solid season all the way throughout. This season, you know, was how he was affected with COVID. As like many teams, there was just too many injuries at the start. We missed our defence. So that's another problem, but. No, I think he's just a patch player. So I think he's just going through rich vein of form and just suits him. But I think that's how, you know, we get results as a team. We do go through, and you've said it when we've spoken on the podcast in the past. When you've gone, you know, I'm just thinking, oh, I'm a bit worried, and you go, you'll be fine, you'll stay up, you always will. But yeah, I just think, I don't know why it seems to be the back end of the season. Whether it's, you know, he's just. If he has a knock, misses a few games and just gets that fitness back to get sharpness back and a bit of confidence, you know, perhaps it's just down to that.
Were you, before the Wolves game, were you a bit worried?
Definitely.
In terms of still going down?
Yeah, really worried. Obviously, we'd spoke before the Southampton game. You think Southampton, Newcastle, you know, you just think if we were to, even just to get a point at both of them, you'd be thinking, you know, we're more than safe. We've just been, I mean, this season we've been absolutely terrible against the bottom six. Out of the 10 games we've played, we've won one, and that was against a poor Sheffield United side. Possible 30 points, we've got 8. You know, so it's...
Wow.
I really didn't want to go into the Fulham game having not picked up any, you know, points if we'd have still been sitting where we were in the table and had to get a result away at Fulham. I'd have just been thinking, you know, that isn't going to happen. So for me, you know, with how we've played this season, West Ham is a much more winnable game than Fulham and even Sheffield United at the end of the season. Just, I think some of it's down to mentality and how Dyche has set up. You know, we seem to take on, you know, sort of the mid-table teams a little bit more than what we would do teams where we'd need to pick up a point or need to, you know, grind out a result. We've just not done that this year.
Yeah, some of them performances, I'm thinking back to like the West Brom at home, Fulham at home, they're very out of context to the way you started at Southampton, the win on Sunday, the win at Everton. There's been some out of context Burnley stuff this year. We spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, like saying I think you are evolving a little bit. And I think it's full credit to what Sean Dyche and the team are trying to do there. Do you feel completely safe now? 9-point gap?
Yeah, I'm not completely, because you never say never, but yeah, I'm a lot more comfortable. I'm back on that. We've actually got 11 points out of a possible 15. Against Arsenal, Liverpool and Everton. So it's those results really that have got us out of shit. Because if it wasn't for them, we'd be sitting probably second bottom or something like that.
You're also the only team I don't think scored against Tottenham this year. Which is pretty poor. Actually, no, to the top of my head, West Brom haven't yet either. But yeah, I mean, how'd you fail to score against us? So I think that's part of it, because what we label with Burnley is consistency. The way you're going to play, it's going to be difficult at Turf Moor, all those sort of things. We've seen some outstanding away performances now. I mean, the football you played on Sunday and the Everton game is not what people think when they think of Burnley, right?
No, and there's been more cases for that. I mean, some of the other games we've played that we've been fantastic in. Don't get me wrong, we've had the results that we've still had to grind out, like at Anfield. You know, we weren't anything spectacular, but we did what, you know, people would probably consider more to be the Burnley approach. But like you said, you know, Crystal Palace, Leicester, Everton, you know, those games, we've been absolutely superb, and we've bossed the midfield, we've pressed well, we've know when to come back. And we've had it, you know, we've had fullbacks getting forward. We've had some really balanced performances. And even that, like on against Wolves, I think Jack Court was a, you know, he's come back into the side and he's been fantastic. He sort of goes unnoticed. He's not one for the fantasy football points, but you know, in terms of when he's in the side, he's for me probably a more all-rounded player, you know, than Brownhill. It was interesting because against United, we'd actually, you know, we'd dropped to just having Wood up front by himself, and you know, that allowed Brownhill and Cork to be in the middle, which is, I think, something that we might, you know, adopt potentially next season. We've not got as many big, you know, big sides coming up. I think we've got Liverpool still to play, so whether, you know, Vidra would miss out on that game. But other than that, it's normally the rigid 4-4-2. But, you know, he's started to tinker around with it a little bit more than what he normally does.
Are West Ham a big side now, Chris?
I suppose they're part of the big six, whatever that is. No,
you ain't as greedy as my lot, mate.
No. It's difficult for me to say yes, because you just have that history where we haven't been, and you know, we could just as easily finish in the top four or five as we could lose three games and end up finishing eighth or something. But that's, again, it's partly your memories of the past. I think certainly mentality wise has changed. I think some of that's where Lingard comes in. I think his attitude, and you know, he talks about game management and stuff like that. So there's all that, you know, there's going to be that, as much as he jokes around, I think he's actually matured quite a lot. And I think having a bit of an influence in, you know, in the approach or talking to players and things like that, it seems to be benefiting him as well as the team. And so in that sense, I think we probably, I wouldn't say we are a top team, but we're certainly we're above a top half team, if that makes any sense.
I feel like there's no point me saying, Chris, do you think you'll finish top four? Because I feel almost certain you're going to say no.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it and I think we could win three of those games. I would say possibly, I think we'd need to win four. And funny enough, I think when I was on the one with Andy, I said I'd be happy with 67 points, and that would give us 67 points. I think if we did that, if we won four out of five games, I'd be where we are now. I'd be happy. Where we finish after that, you can't control with it. If you're only winning three games, then you're going to rely on other teams' results more. But everyone's slipping up. Everyone's having either a wobble or not playing well. No one's. Leicester have had a little bit of a bounce. They were third anyway. You know, Chelsea is still in Europe. They still got to play. They still got to play Real Madrid. You know, that game's far from over. It's 1-1. So, you know, they could slip up. You just don't know. Liverpool have got some good fixtures. They're obviously going to be a threat. So I don't really think that we will finish in the top four, but I don't think it's not. The fact we're even talking about it is just amazing in itself.
Yeah. Listen, think back to this time last year, right? He was well in the shit. I just feel like this weekend feels quite pivotal for West Ham, because I think, obviously, you would expect Chelsea to win this weekend. You would even expect my team to win. And Liverpool, obviously, are at Manchester United. Am I right in saying they've got a better goal difference than you, Liverpool? I mean, it's quite close. But I think even just a point, they would go above you. So you could go into the game Monday night down to seventh. If Everton win as well, they'd be level on points with you with a game in hand.
Yeah.
And then if from there you don't win at Burnley, you'd almost look at it and go, well, that's it, it's over. You're 6 points behind Chelsea with four games to go, inferior goal difference. It's not going to happen, is it?
No,
so I feel like this is quite a pivotal game, and I feel like by the time Monday comes round, West Ham are probably going to feel like they're in a position where I think you could look at the last five games and go, okay, yeah, we need sort of 11, 12 points or so to give ourselves a chance. I think by the time the game comes around Monday, you might be looking at it and going, we have to win this.
Yeah, I think we've got to win it either way, because then if you don't win that, you then go, that's three games that we've lost. You then go into the Everton game, which is then an even bigger high pressure game. And then if you lose that, you know, you're just in, that's just deflating for the team. You know, they're just going to be thinking, it just puts you on a massive downer. So I think anything less than a win is a little bit of a disaster in some ways this week. And if we do win, then it gives us a bit of flexibility. You know, maybe we can get a draw against Everton. I'd like to beat them. If we beat Everton and lose another game, that's in some ways, bizarrely as it sounds, that probably knocks Everton out of the equation if we can take 3 points off them. So you're right, it is a big game. It's going to be a difficult game. I wouldn't say I'm optimistic, but I think the fact Dawson's back, that will be key. Because I think last time when he played, he enjoyed his battle with Woods. And I think Woods is that sort of player that he actually likes playing against. He can deal with that. What Dawson can't deal with is players, you know, moving off him and moving into space and things like that. But he's an old-fashioned defender, isn't he? You know, he likes a physical battle.
Would you expect to come in for Balbuena?
I would think so. I would think Dawson would come in. I would be surprised.
What's the fucking point in peeling that red card then?
he might even drop Diop. I mean, Diop's been doing okay, but I think he's been, the problem with him is that I think he's out of position and a fair bit.
You said this before, yeah.
And I think it's almost like something, you've got another player who's probably as much trying to watch Diop and make sure he's doing what he should be doing. It's not helpful. He doesn't seem.
Do you think that affected Dawson at Newcastle then?
Possibly, yeah. To a degree. I don't think it was solely that though. I don't think you can pin that all on Diop. I think he just had a bit of a nightmare. I mean, St Maximin just tore him apart, didn't he? Really, Newcastle were good that day, and how they played was just, I don't know. We just weren't prepared for it. Which is, I know it seems a bit bizarre. I think St Maximin played a bit more central as well. He didn't play out as wide, so that made a difference. So I wouldn't say that was solely down to Diop, but I think it was a combination. It certainly didn't help. I think if we'd had a better combination there, so I could possibly see Diop coming out. It's a difficult one, really.
Are we expecting Cresswell or Masuaku back?
I think one of them may be back. I think it's more likely Masuaku. Cresswell's been training, but it's whether or not he's ready or not. It'd be interesting if they are both back. I wondered he'd have to be fully fit, but I wondered if he was fully fit, if he'd just have Dawson, Agbonu, and Cresswell back as the three again.
What you really missed, particularly the Newcastle game without Cresswell, was distribution for the back.
Yeah,
because you found yourselves in a really unusual position for West Ham in terms of such domination of possession during the game, which, and considering where you are in the table, it shouldn't be surprising that people still do. Generally, you do get out-possessioned in most games.
Yes.
You obviously had that superior advantage against Newcastle, but then they just let your centre-backs have the ball because they knew that as long as they stopped the quality of the supply line, basically into Lingard and Bowen, it wasn't an issue. Let the back three have the ball. Whereas I think Cresswell can knock diagonals and stuff, balls over the top, which are of different level of quality. So I think that would be a major plus for you if Cresswell's back fit. I'd ask you, Jack, what the Burnley team's going to be on Monday night, but you've just won 4-0, so I presume it'd be the same, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be exactly the same. No changes made to that.
It's really obvious, isn't it?
Unless someone was to get COVID or something, or, you know, injured in training, it would be exactly the same.
So we've got Charlie Taylor's back in now at left back, isn't he?
Yeah, so it'll be Pope, Taylor, me, Tarkowski, Loughton.
Brandhill played on the right, didn't he, at Wolves?
Yeah, he's nowhere near as good on the right. I'd rather see him there. But it was Cork and Westwood in the middle, McNeil on the left. He got chipped in with two assists at the weekend, and then your man Wood and Vidra up top.
It'd be the same, wouldn't it, surely?
Yeah, I'd have thought so. I can't see Brownhill missing out. But for me, I think, you know, Gummison definitely offers a lot more on that side.
Well, it's probably more choice between Cork and Goodmanson, isn't it? I would have thought.
I think Cork would keep his place in the centre personally, okay, if it was to be one of them that missed out. I do think he'll still start with.
Do you think that is that the first choice midfield pairing then? Then Cork and Westwood.
Obviously it was Cork and Westwood until we signed Brownhill last January. Cork was out for probably about 6 months or so, just as Project Restart kind of hit. So he missed out on the back end of last season, and Brownhill sort of just kept his place. Cook came back halfway through the season, just played bits in cup games. But yeah, he's just worked his way back in the team, and I think it's just been can't remember the game he played in, but when he came back and he just sort of steadied the ship a bit, we just looked a bit more solid in the field.
Yeah, that's probably what Cork's got over the other two, isn't it? Yeah. He's a little bit more defensively switched on, isn't he?
Yeah, and he does a lot of the work that you probably don't notice unless if you're watching it on TV, you probably wouldn't see it the same. Whereas, I can see when I'm on the game at Turf Moor that you can see sort of some of the running that he does and some of the just interceptions that he cuts out. Even some of the balls that he cuts off before they're even played that you wouldn't give him credit for. And a lot of Burnley fans miss that, and he sort of gets a bit of stick. But yeah, for me, my first choice would be Cork and Westwood.
And not Brownhill in the team. I really like him, Jack.
Yeah, I do. For me, if Dyche could change it up, it could be one of those where you would sort of mix it up a bit depending on the opposition. But we do know Dyche is an all eggs in one basket sort of man with his team selection. But yeah, it is a tough one. It's a close one. And for me, it probably would just depend on who's in the better run of form. But for me, how we've been recently, I'd rather have the stability of Cork. If we want to start next season and try and be a little bit more expansive and be a bit more creative in midfield, then yeah, probably Brownhill would get the nod.
We must talk about Dwight McNeil. I think I saw a stat after the Wolves game that 66% of his assists have been for Chris Wood.
Yeah.
They've obviously got a good relationship as well.
Yeah, I didn't know that myself until they mentioned it after the game. But, it makes sense. He's our aerial threat from crosses and most crosses coming from that left side. Perhaps when we've talked about McNeil playing on the right, that potentially one of the only reasons why Dyche likes him so much on the left, so he can whip them in with his left foot and Wood can get on the end of them. But, yeah, every cross that Dwight McNeil puts in, he rarely wastes one. So, there's a chance that Wood's getting near it or on the end of it. So, yeah, he's a superb player and definitely got a bright future ahead of him. He just needs to, for me, just add a little bit more to his game for him to become something where you'd be like...
Oh, play on the right!
Yeah.
I really want to see him try it for 10 games on the right. I really think he could take off, actually.
You should write Sean Dyche a letter, just say.
I've had a manager over the last 18 months who ain't got a clue what he's doing. By the way, I'm certain that yours does, so I'm not going to argue with what Sean Dyche does. Interesting one, though. And you and I, Jack, we've spoken about McNeil so much. I feel like it's covering old ground, so I don't really want to go into it again. McNeil's 5.7. Jared Bowen is 6. If you had to buy one this week, Jack, which one would you buy?
For me, I'd probably go McNeil, but that's just me with my Burnley tinted glasses on.
Chris?
I'd probably say Bowen. I think
yes, bias of positivity is so unusual from the correspondents.
I do like McNeil. I think he's a really good player. I think on the plus side for West Ham, if he's playing on the left, he's going to be up against Kufau, and he doesn't give you much change.
I think he's brilliant.
He's dropped off a little bit. I think that's probably where he's played so many games, but he don't give up. If you're an attacker and you must hear him coming after you. It's almost like he's like some hound dog, isn't he? He's coming for you, sort of thing. If he does get past you, but his positioning and everything else is so good. So, I'd hope that he can contain McNeil to some degree. Bowen's obviously him and Lingard are kind of alternating as that striker, whatever your false nine, whatever system is, they kind of enforce there. So. Hopefully he can get some change. Obviously, with Antonio in the team, it'd be a different story. But I think while Antonio's out, Bowen carries that threat. He scored a couple of goals. He's playing pretty well.
Yeah, I think Bowen just carries that goal scoring threat that probably McNeil doesn't have the same.
I think you make a great point, Chris, about Su Fowl. I'm really a fan of him. I love watching him. He's so up and at it, and he just gets the basics of defending right 9 times out of 10 for me. And that's interesting, that actually, Jack, because if Su Fowl can obviously keep McNeil quiet on that side, where's the supply line for wood is the first thing that people would then perhaps be answering in respect to that. I mean, I know what I'd do. I'd put Dwight McNeil on the right. But where would the solution come from in terms of the creativity then for wood?
Yeah, it'd probably just be Westwood. Simple as that. I don't really think... For me, I've not seen Brownhill really do anything on that right-hand side. It's like when we played Hendrick there. For me, it just seems a bit more of a cop-out. It's just maybe tidies us up a little bit more defensively. But if, you know, Goodmanson's injured 50% of the season anyway, so if he's fit and sat on the bench, get him on there so we can get back on that treatment table again. But I think, yeah, it probably would be. If he still deployed McNeil down the left, and just, you know, if he persisted with that, then it would come from central, because I think Westwood's, you know, right up there with our all-time assist maker in the Premier League alongside, not far behind McNeil. So probably be one of the two, to be fair.
I take it Vidra is still an option, right?
Yeah, I mean, so for Vidra's in the last seven games where, you know, we talked about Wood's return, Vidra still had 3 goals and 1 assist, which isn't bad.
That's 4.8.
And I mean, he had one disallowed with VAR against Wolves as well, which was, it was offside, but it was minimal.
Took it well.
Yeah, he always has that, especially if, I think everyone will jump on Wood, but we're all talking about now, you know, every defender's, if someone's just scored a hat-trick, you're going to want to mark him out of the game. So if you're stepping forward to meet Wood as he's coming for the ball, if something just glances over the top, Vidra's on the shoulder. Off. So I think that as well is what plays into Wood's hand, because when you have Barnes and Wood playing, I've said it before, they're like two bouncers. When it's not going their way and you're just playing the balls high, and you know, if they just can't catch a break, it just keeps getting worse and worse for them, which is why Wood saw, you know, he can have a bit of a slump in parts of the season. Whereas I think Vidra just offers you that. If it's not Wood's day, then it may be Vidra's, and he can play off that shoulder quite well.
I guess Vidra owners, those who are on, are probably A, thinking, oh, he's blanked against Wolves, even though, as you said, Easy could have scored himself. Do you want to make the step up in move? I mean, that's the first thing. If you were sitting there with Vidra and you had the $3 million in the bank, I mean, you don't need that much, but would you recommend moving straight to Wood, or would you just stick with Vidra?
I mean, I've done it before with Burnley's attackers, and you can jump from one to the next. Wood probably is more potent, and he's the better finisher, you know, naturally a much better finisher than Vidra. But I just think you can't second guess it. I think if Wood's had a busy week last week, I wouldn't, unless you really, really want to use a transfer, I'd personally just stick with Vidra. Because, you know, take aside Wood's hat-trick, you wouldn't be having the same conversation. I mean, maybe I'm just being a bit pessimistic, and I'm not probably the best person to go off because I refuse to get Gundogan in for the same reasoning. But I don't think there's much in it. And I think, you know, if you're saying that, you know, Dawson's an old-fashioned defender, if he's thinking, I want to get tight to Wood, he's not winning that ball, it just gives you that, you know, that there's more of a chance of it breaking for Vidra.
And Chris has spoken about Diop positional concentration sometimes as a problem.
Yeah. So
interesting.
I think Wood will, you know, Wood's rich vein of form will bring in someone like Vidra and perhaps create him more space.
Do you think, obviously the system was changed at United where Vidra didn't play, do you think that will come back around, say when you play Liverpool in 37, or do you think this is it, that was a, what do you think the thinking was behind, it was more of a 4-5-1 or 4-1-4-1 at Old Trafford, what do you think the thinking was behind that?
I think it was just
Fernandes, or
I mean, we played well, and like you said, you know, we could have probably got something out of the game.
Yeah, but definitely.
I think Dyche just wanted us to have that more solid performance. I don't think he was asked about result. I think it was more just if we could keep in the game, and you know, if we were to get beat by one goal, you'd come away and you could say, you know, we can build on that performance. I just think after the two really crap games that we had, it was just his way of saying, right, come on, let's try and get a bit of momentum still going. I think if we'd have turned up there when we played United at home, I just remember watching us, and it was the two strikers were absolutely isolated. United had the ball. You know, they're very good out wide. You know, Rashford's happy just keeping it at his feet. So, you know, the two strikers are just isolated. So, whether he's just thought, you know, let's pack the midfield and just give us another option. But yeah, I probably don't see us doing it against Liverpool just because of the season they're having. And hopefully by then, if we've got another couple of points on the board, you know, we won't need to approach that defensively. But I think it was just us trying to, you know, solidify it and just get a more solid Burnley-like performance.
Chris, how's our old friend Thomas Souček doing? With Mark Noble next to him, is his life become more difficult?
I think so. I mean, he's you see him a lot more in the wrong box rather than the right, the box you want him in. You know, he's there. When, you know, he's getting in battles. He's playing well, but from a fantasy point of view, he's without Rice there, it's definitely affected him. He's not getting in the, probably even Antonio as well to some degree, because he's getting maybe a chance or possibly two, but he's not getting the chances he was. I think I had a look back, and I think it was like game week 22 or something. It was his last goal. So, you know, you're looking quite a long way back. I mean, it started to drop off a little bit anyway with Rice, when Rice was playing. So without Rice, it's kind of game over for him, because Noble was not getting around the pitch as much as Rice would. And Rice would be the one picking up the ball, so that would then allow Souček to be the runner going forwards without the ball, where it's a slightly different... He's doing a bit of everything and not really, you know, from an attacking point of view, not the same threat that he was early on in the season.
Yeah, Souček has one goal since 22. It was a goal against Arsenal, which was kind of, from an FPL perspective, cancelled out by the own goal, yep. Which I still want to kill the cameraman that day, because most cameras wouldn't pick that up during a game.
No. Just
a Lacazette goal, which was a little bit frustrating as an owner. I want to ask you as well, if we assume Bowen and Lingard are two of the front three at the moment, who would you want to be the third? Because we've seen a bit of Four Nows, a bit of Benrahma. Who do you as a fan want to play in that third role?
I think it depends. If Rice was there, I'd like to see Benrahma given a bit more of a chance. He's got something about him. He's got that slightly unpredictable nature. He's that little bit of flair. But I don't think we can afford to play him at the moment without Rice there. We need sort of Fornells there. Fornells is good. He's a good player. But for excitement purposes and goals, you're going to get more from Benrahma in the long run, which is harsh on Fornells, because he's always done a job. He puts a shift in. He gets the occasional goal. But he's there more for the solidity and his structure within the team. I think that's where Benrahma's struggling to fit in. I know there's a sort of a bit of a split on fans thinking, you know, they made a mistake, but it's his first season. He's not really had a run of games. I'd like to see more of him. Probably Lingard being there has impacted on him, because it's that area where, sort of, you know, out on the left where he could be playing maybe. But yeah, I think I'd like to. If it gets to the point where we're not realistically going to make the top four, I think I'd like to see him just go for it and just put Benrahma in and see what he can do. If he gets a goal, that's it. It's going to give him confidence. He needs that goal.
I think at the moment it would still be Fornells for me, in my opinion. I'd say one of the things I'd like to see you try, and I think Monday could be a good game for it, although I'd be very surprised if David Moyes did it, was, and this isn't a slight on Noble actually, because I think he's done all right in the games that he's played coming for Rice. I think he's done okay. I'd like to see Lanzini tried with Souček in a central midfield position.
Interesting. Yeah, so he's again, he's got something about him. You know, he can do something with the ball. He has got the legs.
Just look at the five games you've got left if Rice isn't going to be back. And I think probably Brighton actually in 36, you're probably going to have more of the ball in the other games.
Yes.
And I think having him in that area would be particularly useful, and it will benefit the forward players in front. Because I think if you take the game against Burnley on Monday, the game's going to bypass Mark Noble a lot. He's going to feel like he's in the middle of a tennis match.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that particularly disrespectfully to Jack, but they'll look at Noble and go, we're going to bypass this and go into Wood or get the ball into the wide area. We know that. Burnley are aggressive in the way they play. And we've spoken a lot about get it into the final third, then get it down and play. And that's Burnley at their best. It's not just smash it in over the top all the time. It's okay. Yeah, we want to get into the final third. Then when we want to play, when we get there. And I think it's a particular game where Noble might struggle. Now, you could say, well, same will happen to Lanzini. And I agree. But I think that the quality, when you have it and you'll have large spells of the ball, would be better.
Yeah, I mean, what is strong point, he's still got that ability, is where if he gets the ball, he can sort of just have that little bit of zip just to get out of that tight space, and the quality to quick passes, quick short passes, and move. I think Rice will be back. I don't know when, but he'd definitely be back before the last game. I would.
Me and Jack just want to be told that he's going to be back for Croatia in June, mate. That's what we're bothered about.
I think he'd definitely be back for that without fail. He's talked that he's not far off. So, maybe even the Everton game, he might even be back in some capacity for.
It would be such a boast. He's been absolutely outstanding, mate.
Yeah, no, he is.
Far better. To be honest, everybody I've seen who's been critical of him is just completely at their words and even retracting and gone, do you know what? He's one hell of a player. Do you think he'll stay? Obviously, if you finish off, yes. But
yes. I'd like to think so. I'd like to think he would. I suppose, again, it comes down to who's going to buy him and who's going to pay the money, because it's not going to be that. They're not going to let him go cheap. He's still got a reasonable contract. But when I've seen him, ever since a few years ago, he's one of them players that even if he made a mistake in a game, even when he's very young, he didn't make that same mistake again. If someone done him, that wouldn't happen again. It would not in that same way. But I think this season, especially, he's attacking and his distribution. That's what he's. It's almost like he's been working on that all the time. That's where the biggest improvements come. And I think that's where the doubters are, because everyone's sort of been saying it was like it last year, but people only see what they want to see. And if you're seeing the same player all the time, you see a lot more. He's always had that ability, but I think he's come on a notch. I think particularly for England as well, people have started talking about him, you know, he's got to be in the team, that kind of thing, which before he was like,
I think he has
been compared to Longstaff and people like that.
EC. that's fair though, Jack, isn't it? It has to be an England team.
Yeah, definitely.
I know you follow England quite a bit on that.
Yeah, well, my tickets have just been refunded, but that's another story.
Ah, sorry, mate.
I know, bloody COVID. But yeah, I think he's. I think what happened was with Rice was everyone talked about his transfer and he put a big price tag on him for a reason because of his age. And then people just look at him and go, you look at all the bad things, don't they? So I think people just. You can't appreciate a central midfielder unless you watch them week in, week out. You know, people still doubt Henderson. He was a massive part of how Liverpool, you know, played when they won the title. I think he was definitely one of the first names on the England team sheet. It has to be.
It's pretty a bit what you said about Cook, though, isn't it? Because where you see them in a game, you see so much more about what they do off the ball when they're not on the camera. Obviously, Rice does get involved in the game.
Yeah,
more than probably Cook, but it's that kind of thing, isn't it? That's been there for a long time, where obviously you would see things that other people wouldn't in that sense.
So. Yeah, definitely. And sometimes you don't want to see them. If you want to be getting into more attacking positions. If he's doing his defensive work well, then you might not see him as much in the game because he's had a solid game and just gone unnoticed.
Jack, how much do you want for McNeil and Wood as my Son and Kane replacements?
Must be talking 70, 80.
Oh, well, we've got change for Declan Rice as well then. That's good.
I'm trying to be realistic. That's mad to think though.
How old's Chris Wood?
29, I guess.
Yeah, he's in a later stage, isn't he? I think.
Yeah. I mean, you must be talking 40 for McNeil. We paid 15 for Wood, so Wood must be worth 15, 20.
I don't think 40 for McNeil's ridiculous at all, actually. I just think he's got so much potential. Please play him on the right for 10 games. I just want to see it for a consistent period to know if I'm right or not. That's all I really want.
I think it's just the Burnley stigma again. If you played for Brighton or Palace, then you know people wouldn't laugh you out of the park when you said things like that. You'd probably be asking for more. He's still on the young. He's 21. You know, he's played some of the, for his age, he's played more football than most. So there's a lot of players that don't break through till they're 21, 22, and he's already had sort of three seasons in him now. So, yeah.
I'll tell you what I did mean to ask you. Do you feel like James Tarkowski's had a bit of a dip this year?
Yeah, he's not quite been up to his usual standards. He's always had that where he is better on the ball than Ben Mee. You can see that his composure is much better, but he's just made sometimes the wrong decisions. And I feel like Ben Mee's relied on his leadership a little bit more this season, whereas in the past it's been a little bit more like they've just connected. Whether there's, you know, whether there was more in his, the transfer saga with him pushing for a move, he's obviously going into the last year of his contract next season. And he missed the start of the season with a toe injury. Whether there was anything in that or what, I don't know. But his girlfriend was putting on social media, the day when there was a transfer saga going on, she'd uploaded a photo of them in Athens or Greece or wherever. Turns out it was just an old photo and she was just trying to stir the pot, but it just seemed a little bit like things were turning sour. You know, like she did it for a reason. It wasn't just that. And then everyone was going like, oh, how's his toe? So whether they were playing a bit of funny buggers, you know, I wouldn't put it past them. It was a very weird sort of 6 months for us, you know, from project restart to sort of the takeover happening, because it was like you didn't know whether they were just going to cash in on Tarkowski. You know, Daesh was sort of keeping his lips sealed. He said he's still a Burnley player until I'm told otherwise. So I think Tarkowski will definitely want off. And I think if anything, the way West Ham have played this season will be a massive kick in the teeth. And, you know, I'll hold my hand up. I was one of the ones that said it would be a sideways move, but, you know, West Ham are probably a much more established Premier League side. You know, and he would have the option of potentially playing European Champions League football next season, depending on where they finish. So,
Jack, I swear you came on in January and you tried to sell Liverpool Tarkowski, and now you're trying to fucking sell him to West Ham. I'd rather keep him,
but I'm just trying to be realistic.
I don't think he wants to come.
He's better than anything I've got.
Because I think they were offering something like 25 million, and then I think Burnley were holding out for 30, if you believe what you read in the papers and that social media and stuff. But it sounded like he was slightly reluctant to come to West Ham at the time. So I think he was just going up
in increments of match attacks, though, weren't he? He was like, I'll trick another packet in. It seemed to be making new offers, but there was never anything extra there.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, it's a tough one, isn't it, really? I suppose he's obviously angling for a move, isn't he, like you say, but where he'll end up.
I think if someone like Leicester, no disrespect, would have come in, he probably would have jumped to that more.
Yeah.
Perhaps he did, you know, but you don't know what goes on behind the scenes. I think he probably would have been open to a move. I seen something the other day, I was looking, because my mate's a Crystal Palace fan. I think Tarkowski's on something like 50k a week, something like that. Scott Dan's on like 100k a week at Palace.
And Saka's wages
on something
crazy,
like 130k. So you're thinking, if they're on that amount of money, you know, even if Tarky makes a sideward step, you know, if he went to West Ham and was on 80, 90 grand a week, it's not really a sideward step, is it? I mean, wouldn't mind that going into my bank account every week.
I think, to be fair, at the time, it would have, when the transfer was being talked about, it was a kind of sideways move. We weren't in that position in the league where we are now. And sort of we stayed up there for a reasonable period of time at the time. On previous seasons, we weren't any better than yourselves, really, in that aspect, I don't think. So I think that's fair to say that, I think, at the time.
You won't get any more money, like, you won't get the figures like that at Burnley, though, so I think he will be looking to move on at the end of this season.
I think transfer fees are quite hard this year, I think, as well, because when you talk about players, I think it's going to be a bit of a domino effect, isn't it, as to what players are worth, because what players are worth in terms of, you know, you say Harry Kane's worth X amount, or you say Dwight McNeil's worth X amount.
How much is Jesse Lingard worth?
have to ask Man United. He's not a West Ham player, mate.
I was going to say about 5 million.
How much would you pay for him?
I was going to say about 5 million, but obviously we won't get him for that. I think they'd be prepared to pay 20, 25, but I don't know if they're...
You ain't going to get him for that, mate.
No. You'd have competition at that price, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
absolutely. I think Arsenal were very, very interested, is what I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. I mean, I suppose it all depends on the player, his agent, what they're offering him, where he wants to go. But at the end of the day, if someone offers 35 and we're offering 25, obviously it's a no-brainer. If it's a couple of million, it's probably not so bad. But it's going to be a tricky one. It's almost unfortunate we didn't have that, you know, that option to buy at a price, a agreed price. But to be fair,
that would have been perfect.
I was a little bit sceptical when he first got linked with him. I didn't think he was going to do as well as he has. You know,
most of the Burnley fan base is putting tweets out saying, "Oh, we won't take him in our side," and now they've all gone. They're like, "Oh."
To be fair, I think he's proved a lot of people.
Burnley fans aren't the only ones, I can tell you, mate. He's been brilliant, Jesse Lingard. He's been a joy to watch since he joined you. And it would be the best thing for Jesse Lingard is to sign for West Ham.
Yeah,
go. He seems happy again. I heard him speak a couple of weeks ago. He talked about like depression his mum had been through and stuff. And he was having games where he was on the bench at Man United. He didn't feel like he wanted to play. He's obviously found his happy place again now. And it seems to be at West Ham. So he should go and, as far as I'm concerned, he should follow that through. But West Ham have got a... You know, if it comes to the summer and Arsenal go, right, but there's 40 and West Ham are only putting up 25, 30, then they end up going to Arsenal or something.
As long as it's not Happy Place Turf Moor on Monday, that's all I'm bothered about.
I'm glad you picked up the link there, Jack. That's a great place to end this podcast. Happy Place Turf Moor. Jack, what will be the prediction at Turf Moor for you on Monday then?
I'm feeling optimistic. I'm more optimistic against West Ham than I would be against Fulham or Sheffield United. So I'm going to go 2-1 Burnley.
Nice. Chris?
I would say 2-1 as well, but the other way around. I'm ruling my heart more than my head, but I think 2-1.
I think that we haven't got the full team news for the weekend. I think a return of Cresswell and Masuaku, or even just one of them, would be massive for you, Chris.
Agreed.
If neither are back, I'm going to back Burnley, actually. I'm going to go 2-1 Burnley as well. I think one of the key things to watch out for the game is this gap between defence and midfield I keep talking about has been a bit of a problem for you, Jack. You think of the St. Maximin goal.
Yeah.
Other goals in the Southampton game where like sort of like people like Redmond kept running at you and stuff. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons why Cork's found himself back in the team recently as well. It's just shut that down a little bit. That said, I did just check. He did play in the 4-0 at Tottenham as well. And you had the same problem that day. So something I really want to keep on an eye on Monday night, because you think about in that spatial area, who could do really well in there? It's our mate Jesse. He could actually do really well on Monday. I think if West Ham do well on Monday, I would definitely expect returns from Lingard personally. But I'm going to say 2-1 Burnley as well. Chris got nothing to say to that. I'm not that playing him either. You've got to win Monday, Chris. Our big man mentality. Go to Burnley and win. That's such a
Burnley thing to do. To cock it up, though, isn't it?
Well, if Fulham get beat on Saturday... That's the other thing, isn't it? If Fulham
to cock it up for West Ham.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're well up there for party poopers, mate. Yeah. Premier League party poopers, Burnley gets at the top of that list. It's not the game that anyone ever wants, mate.
We're the health and safety inspectors of the Premier League, aren't we?
Basically. You're playing some good stuff at the moment, though. I think most people have watched you, particularly in away games recently. I've really enjoyed Burnley games. Even the Southampton game was a brilliant game, mate.
Yeah,
one of the best games I've watched this season.
If we could just
didn't think so, but.
Yeah, we've just not done that back to back. I think we talked about the Everton game and we were fantastic, and then you just seemed a bit afterwards. I think if we could just keep that momentum going, which we just haven't had, which probably is down to the lack of fans and stuff as well, so it probably takes its toll.
The one win, one defeat is better than the two draws.
Yeah, though. I agree. Yeah,
I feel like we've had a lot of periods in the past where we've gone, oh, Burnley have gone 6-7 undefeated, and you look for it and you go, oh, okay, there's been 4 or 5 draws in there or something. So definitely something evolving at Burnley. I'm conscious of it. I think you're in a good place, especially if the manager stays. I think there are going to be a couple of clubs. I mean, to be honest, you mentioned some of the wages at Palace and stuff. It's the sort of one where I don't think it would be a great move for him, but they might put up the sort of money that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Possibly. And I think they will be looking for a new manager.
Yeah, definitely.
To be honest, for them, he should be at the top of the list, I would say.
Yeah. They're a weird one, though, Palace, because I think my mate, who's a Palace fan, called me and they were 1-0 up and he was like, oh, can you believe it? In the 80th minute, he just took a striker off and put a defender on. I'm like, if you had Sean Dyche, mate, you'd be getting that week in, week out.
Invariably, he gets his teams over the line, though.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, guys. Much appreciate that. You can follow Jack on Twitter at TurfyTop, and you can follow Chris at FPL_SkyAddict on Twitter as well. I have a plan in place for Clash of the Correspondents next week. I have 2 COTCs lined up, but I need the Premier League to announce the bloody fixtures before I can announce what those are going to be. So it's unconfirmed yet what COTCs will be next week, but there is something in place and planned. We're obviously going to be off social media ourselves over the blackout period to appeal against the continued online discrimination that goes on social media. We need more now, more than ever, companies like Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and YouTube to begin taking responsibility. After we stay silent, we will late after the period of what are we calling it? Lockdown. I don't want to call anything lockdown. Just got lockdown in my head. After the blackout period ends, we will be releasing a podcast that me and Stitch will be doing on online discrimination in football. Other than that, thanks again very much to Jack and Chris. Have a great weekend, everyone. Good luck for the game week. Cue music, please, Manchild.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.